Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, September 12th. I'm Alan Chartok. Underwriting support for Medical Monday comes from New York Oncology Hematology for 30 years, providing comprehensive treatment of cancer and blood disorders. World-class care close to home. World-class care, New York. Oncology.com, NewYorkOncology.com. Joining us today is Dr. Luke Pluto. He's board-certified pulmonologist with a specialty in sleep disorders like sleep apnea, insomnia, and narcolepsy. He comes to us from Albany Medical Center's Division of Pulmonology. Well, it says here pulmonology and critical care medicine. Oh, I get it. Having trouble sleeping? Dr. Pluto's here to answer your questions. 1-800-348-2551. Do it now. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is pulmonologist Dr. Luke Pluto. He's board-certified sleep and pulmonary disease specialist with Albany Meds, Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine. He treats patients with sleep disorders like sleep apnea, narcolepsy, and insomnia. Dr. Pluto earned his medical degree from Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. He completed his residency in internal medicine at St. Joseph's Hospital in Chicago and completed his fellowship in pulmonary medicine at Loyola University in Maywood, Illinois. Got a question for Dr. Pluto? Can't sleep? Give us a call. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Doctor, I want to ask, first of all, welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
Put that thing in front of you, will you? That'd be easier. That'd be great. Yeah, no, much better. Okay. So my first question is this. You like it at Albany Med?
Yes, I do very much.
Did you want to thank anybody?
Sure. I'd love to thank Albany Med in general for the support of the sleep program. Also, several individuals who, there are many more who I won't be able to mention, but Dr. Boris Medaroff is a sleep specialist in my division. Also, the staff in the sleep center, Sheila, who scores the records, Dorothy, who greets you coming in with a big smile and does the scheduling, and then Erica, the manager, kind of pulls it all together.
Yeah, well, I went over to the other guys to have mine done over there, and they made me do this thing. They sleep on a back. They put all the things on you. You know what I mean? But here's what I've never quite understood about all of that. Thank you, Ian. I knew you could do that. We're just messing around with this. Okay. So one of the things that they did is they had me sleeping on my back. And then, you know, to see whether you snore or not. So what happened is I don't sleep on my back. I haven't slept on my back. I'm 75. So for 75 years, I have not slept on my back. The only place I sleep is on my tummy, right? On my tummy, I do not snore. On my back, I snore. So how come I didn't get tested on my tummy?
I don't know. Each lab has its own protocol. But in general, we like to have people sleep on their back to see how bad they are.
Is it usually worse in the back, Doc?
Usually worse on the back. The problem is that the muscles in the throat don't keep enough tone to keep the throat open when someone has sleep apnea. But when someone is on their back, the tongue will fall back and block the throat off as well. However, we don't necessarily insist that people sleep in any given position. We may encourage them to sleep on their back. And also, if we're treating somebody with the mask, the pressure mask, referred to as CPAP, which stands for continuous positive airway pressure, we'll often encourage people to sleep on their back because we want to see that those apneas or episodes of not breathing are controlled in the worst possible situation.
Oh, interesting. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Nobody on the phone yet, so I'll ask all my questions. Question number one. Recently, because I'm not a good sleeper, recently I decided to stop coffee. I've been a coffee addict for years. I've been having 4-5 cups of coffee, the stronger the better, every day. I stopped, and guess what? I'm sleeping a little better. Is that possible? That it's really, is that psychological, or is it possible that caffeine really does that to you?
caffeine really does that to you. And it's been my personal observation that as people get older, that they'll become more sensitive to caffeine. They'll become more sensitive to caffeine later in the day. And caffeine has a fairly long half-life or time that it remains in the system. And so by diminishing caffeine in the afternoon or caffeine altogether, you certainly can improve your nighttime sleep.
Well, that's astounding. So that's one thing that will make me sleep a little bit better. Then they always give you all this stuff about no lights in the room and no lights in the room, no stimulating television before you go to sleep. You think that's always seemed a little bit far-fetched to me.
Every situation is different. And so if I were to see you as a patient, I'd take a history. I'd ask you about your bedtime routine and what your specific problems are. And if you have no trouble falling asleep with the television on, then it's not an issue.
Now, that's a very good point, because both my twin brother and I are, when our head is headed toward the pillow, you're asleep by the time your head gets to the pillow. It is not the going to sleep that gets you. It's the staying asleep that gets you. So there's a certain type of, of anxiety that happens during the night, right?
Okay, so what you're specifically describing is referred to as difficulty maintaining sleep?
Yes, that's me.
And that's the instance where the various wavelengths of light come into play. And as a general rule, if someone cannot sleep, it's best psychologically to leave the bedroom, because if one develops a habit or a conditioned response to laying in the bedroom, watching the clock and not sleeping, in general, this will perpetuate the difficulty sleeping. It will perpetuate the insomnia. And so generally, I tell people, get up, leave the bedroom, do some kind of quiet activity. And I don't necessarily say to put a blue light filter on your electronic device, but I say avoid electronic devices. Don't check your messages or social media or the news.
Not read the New York Times in the middle of the night like I do.
Oh, that's your call.
But wait. Now, the phones are beginning to really ring here, so I want to get my questions in really fast.
Okay.
So I've been reading in the papers lately that there is a newly discovered thing, which is the hour in the middle of the night. That, in other words, that some people recognize that there's always an hour they get up, they're up, but they don't get out of bed, and then they fall back asleep. Do you know anything about this hour, this magic hour in the middle of the night?
Unfortunately, I'm not aware of the magic hour.
Oh boy. Well, okay. So you're not aware of the magic hour. Okay. So I get up at 2:30 in the morning. Is that too early?
It depends on when you go to bed.
I knew you were going to say that. So if I go to bed at, is there such a thing as going to sleep too early, even if you get up at 2:30? So quite frequently, I go to bed at 7:30 at night.
Okay.
When my grandson Noah, he's 2 and a half, comes to visit us, he goes to sleep later than I do.
Okay, so I quickly figured about 7 hours is what you sleep.
That's about right.
So
is that okay?
If the sleep is good quality sleep, but it is hard to get up at 2:30, because the tendency at that time is to sleep, and most people will want to be asleep at that time while it's dark, and so you're kind of working against your body's natural tendency. However, if this is a routine you've developed and you function well, then it's not an issue.
Okay, we're going to talk now to Barbara in Chestertown, New York. All right. Barbara, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, doctor.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I had sleep apnea. I didn't know I had it until I went to an ear, nose, and throat person and asked him, How do I stop snoring? Because my kids kicked me out of when I rent a condo for a vacation. The kids kicked me out of a condo that I'm paying for. It was that bad.
That is bad.
He sent me for a sleep study. I didn't even know they had such things.
Excellent.
Told me I had sleep apnea.
Okay.
And prescribed a CPAP machine, which I couldn't use. What I eventually did was lost a lot of weight. And I wondered whether I still had sleep apnea because I live alone. Now, I asked the question, they sent me something that I fell asleep with this thing clipped to my finger.
Exactly.
And they sent me a postcard.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
It's called an oximeter.
They sent me a postcard.
It's an oximeter.
That I don't have sleep.
I don't know about the, what was on the postcard?
Oh, I don't have sleep apnea anymore.
Okay.
But I still snore sometimes.
Okay.
How did you stop having sleep apnea? I don't get it. What'd they do?
I lost a lot of weight.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah, yeah, I'm, as thin as a rail, and I still snore on my back.
Yeah, so there you have it. Yeah. Excellent. Every situation is unique. I see numerous patients with sleep apnea who are not overweight at all. However, the increased weight will increase the severity of the sleep apnea. So on the other hand, weight reduction will decrease the severity of the sleep apnea. But every situation is unique. But you describe it exactly. The very loud snoring that's bothersome to others. You saw your physician who rightly ordered a sleep study before doing anything. Then, based on that result, it was recommended to use CPAP, or continuous positive airway pressure, which is very effective, but you couldn't use it. And so that's, again, that's very individual.
Why couldn't you use it?
Oh, okay. Because it would talk.
Are you still there?
Or,
yeah, well, yes, my wife didn't like it. My wife didn't like it either, yeah, so I sort of stopped it.
So I would take the mask off to give myself a break and fall asleep with the mask off.
Yeah.
I'd drop right off to sleep.
Every situation is unique. The newer masks and the newer machines are much better.
Are they?
The masks are more comfortable. The machines are much quieter. But people who use the CPAP and who wake up feeling better rested and not feeling sleepy in the daytime will continue to use it. But again, every situation is unique. So you did what was quite appropriate. You lost weight. And then without seeing the actual information, it's difficult to speculate. However, I would personally take a similar approach if I see someone who lost a significant amount of weight, but if on their original sleep study there was a decrease in the oxygen level, then I would repeat some kind of a test. And so what you had done was an oximeter that measures your oxygen
saturation. That's that thing that goes on your finger?
Right. That's one particular monitor. But
I knew the guy who owned that company. Can you imagine what he made on that?
Wow.
But is that a good machine? Is that something I can count on?
What's that, the oximeter?
The oximeter? No, that just judges whether you got troubles.
That measures oxygen. So, again, every situation is unique. But if your sleep apnea was shown to cause decreased oxygen levels on the original test that you had, then it would be logical to check the oxygen level. But if you really want to know for sure, you could consider other types of testing which would measure more variables. But again, every situation is unique, and so without going over your records and such, I would have to defer to the ENT, who sounds like that physician was really on the ball.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate
your
call.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
1-800-348-2551. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from The Whistling Kettle, featuring iced tea for summer hydration and a selection of over 150 premium teas, including specialty iced tea makers, Troy and Ballston Spa, thewhistlingkettle.com. Northeast Solar in Hatfield, Massachusetts, helping Pioneer Valley residents live more sustainably with solar power. For home, business, or farm, keep solar local, northeast-solar.com. And from Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio. PrivateFinancialDesign.com, securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA, and SIPC. Support comes from George Heigl, Cowen's representative, available for estate, trust, and full collection evaluations and consultations in the Capital Region, 518-396-7974. And from Bodywork Professionals, licensed massage therapists, Nick Pavaldi, advanced structural integration practitioner, proprietor, offices in Latham and Saratoga Springs, open 7 days. Your massage and bodywork experts, bodyworkprofessionals.com.
And we're back. Thank you, Zachary. We're going to take a call from Tony in Connecticut, who wants to talk about CPAP. Okay, Tony, you're on. Go. Tony.
Good afternoon, doctor. How are you?
Fine, thanks. And you?
I'm doing well. I have a question. Other than CPAP, what have they come out with recently? Anything new?
There's been a lot that's come out. There are some new approaches. The latest one is an implanted pacemaker of sorts that fires into the tongue muscle. I would not recommend it. CPAP really has stood the test of time and really has been quite effective, and all the professional societies keep coming back to CPAP as the best treatment for sleep apnea. So if you're doing well with it, I wouldn't necessarily change. Okay, what sort of problem are you having?
Well, you sound like you're...
They can't get the mask to fit me properly, and the latest one I went to was a year ago, and they've tried every which way but loose, and they actually put me on an anti-seizure medication last week. Zamesteride, I can't remember off the top of my head because it's something very recent. They said that should help somewhat. I was wondering if you heard of that.
I'm not aware of an anti-seizure medication being used for sleep apnea. However, I see patients frequently with this sort of an issue who have trouble tolerating their machine, and so this would go back to your initial problem and testing in your situation. It'd be important to look at the severity of sleep apnea and whether it varies by position. And so there are other approaches. For example, in mild sleep apnea, in patients who can't tolerate the CPAP, sometimes they'll benefit from an oral appliance. But this is best manufactured by a dentist who uses a reliable lab to make the devices and who monitors your progress. So that's one particular approach. There are some surgical approaches in very specific instances, but I don't like to speculate or make any specific recommendations without knowing you and seeing your records.
Okay, Tony. Thank you, Tony. Okay, that's Tony. He sounded like he was under the river, which is why, you know, we did that. Okay, so let's go to Larry on line number 3. Larry, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Hello.
For those folks out there who have trouble with that CPAP machine, I found that for me, using an athlete's mouth guard, like the athletes use to protect their teeth,
yes,
that seems to be effective for me. I've had that for several years, and I find it to be good because I couldn't tolerate that machine.
And what way has
that's
the,
all I have.
How did it help you?
How do you use?
Keeps
how do you...
my mouth shut. Well, it keeps my mouth from opening up.
Okay.
I bite down on it, and it seems to have a little friction to it, or something that
did you have
keeps
some...
it closed.
Did you have snoring before this?
Oh yes.
And this eliminated the snoring.
Yes.
Okay. That's something to consider. Again, it's hard to say without knowing the severity of the sleep apnea. I do have patients that use that sort of a mouth guard or get a device from a dentist, but those patients should be tested in some way, at least to check that the oxygen level is all right. But the snoring being eliminated, that's a very good sign.
Okay.
Yes. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Hang up. All right. Now we're going to go to Wilma in Highland, New York. All right, Wilma, you're on.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, and so are we. Go ahead.
All right, I've had sleep apnea for many years. I've had two sleep lab nights when I spend the night in Vassar Brothers sleep lab.
Okay.
And I've also tried the CPAP. I really couldn't tolerate it. I've got a list of 4 medications. My latest is Xanax, but I still have trouble sleeping, and I still have night terrors. And the night terrors are really the worst part of it because I end up screaming so hard sometimes my throat hurts.
Do you remember these night terrors? Do you remember the specifics? For example, is it
never? I never remember. The only thing I can tell you is they happen shortly, within an hour, 45 minutes to an hour after I fall asleep. Sometimes I have a variety of sleep problems. Sometimes I can't get to sleep, and I'm awake until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Other times I sleep until 2 or 3, and then I get up and I read. I mean, I had the whole sheet about sleep hygiene. The only pattern I can tell you is that they do happen shortly after I fall asleep.
So the night terrors are the most distressing problem for you right now?
Well, I mean, not being able to. Luckily, I'm retired, but I've been struggling with this for 25 to 30 years. I am not overweight. I'm very active. I just wonder, is there anything I'm not doing? Right now, I'm on Xanax because the doctor said it has a 4-hour... What do they call that? lifespan or whatever.
Half-life.
Half-life, right. And before that, I was on clonazepam probably about 10 years. But I think I'm having a lot of trouble with the Xanax. I was doing pretty well on the clonazepam, but the doctor said I really need to go on Xanax because of the half-life.
Yeah, you've got several issues. This is challenging to sort this out. You've got the sleep terrors, which are unusual in people in adults. You've also got sleep apnea, and difficulty sleeping. So putting this all together, this is challenging. There's no one simple answer, but I would think in your case, whatever sleep apnea you've got, the primary goal should be to treat that adequately. So to see someone with your constellation of problems, I would really focus on the sleep apnea, make sure that that's adequately treated, and then address the sleep terrors. But this is complicated.
So thank you, Wilma, for the call. Appreciate it very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot of lines open right now. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Ruth, and then I want to come back to the doctor and ask him for the word of the day, pneumonia. Okay, well, let's go to Ruth. Okay, Ruth, you're on.
Hello, I'm there.
Yes, you are.
Hello, Ruth.
Okay, I just wanted to comment. Earlier, a gentleman mentioned waking up and then going back to sleep. There are some diaries and letters from the 17th and 18th century that refer to a second sleep, and they talk about it as though it was very common and not treated as anything very serious. People would wake up and they would get up and do some odd work or something that needed to be taken care of, and then they'd go back to bed, and that was that.
Very interesting.
That's all.
Ruth, that's what I was talking about. I was talking about that so-called second sleep that people have. I know I get it, no question about it. You know,
well,
and I do all the things the doctor said not to do.
Back in the day, nobody thought it was bad. I had a friend a long time ago. She got up and washed windows. Whew,
well, that's a good thing. Yeah. That's what he said. Get up out of bed. I don't do that.
If you do some physical activity is important. If not at night, in the daytime, if somebody has difficulty sleeping, exercise any time of the day is quite helpful. As long as it's not really vigorous exercise just close to bedtime, because generally that keeps people more alert. But it's fascinating you're talking about a second sleep. I'm unaware of these particular letters, but you may be talking about sleep stages, because usually in the earlier part of the night, people have the deeper sleep, the stage 3 sleep.
Right.
And then later in the night, people generally get the dreams, which is where most of the rapid eye movement sleep tends to occur. And so the functions of these are unknown, but the rapid eye movement sleep is particularly interesting because this is where dreams occur, and so there's quite a bit of historical and religious perspective about dreams, and it's still not known what their function is, but they are quite fascinating.
So what if you nap and have dreams? Let's say, you know, I do this every once in a while. I'm pretty tired. I get down and I take a little nap, and I'm dreaming. Is that bad?
No.
Oh. I thought it might be bad.
No, not necessarily.
Because it indicates you're doing in the afternoon what you should be doing at night.
Well, I mean, again, every situation is unique. And for somebody who has a lot of trouble falling asleep and staying asleep, then it's felt perhaps eliminating the daytime naps is better. But again, it's not a one-size-fits-all proposition.
Mrs. Eisenhower, she always talked about the value of a nap every day for an hour in the middle of the day. She said that's what, and she lived a long time, I think. Anyway, thanks an awful lot. We appreciate it. Okay. All right. Let's go to Carolyn. I'm looking here. Looking. Okay, let's go to Carolyn on line one. Carolyn, you're on.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Caroline.
Caroline.
I'm just calling to, I have a question for the doctor. I also wanted to say that, you know, for me, a nap is a really good thing, so long as it's not too long. Really around 20 minutes is all I need. I think sometimes if I sleep too long, it really throws off my entire system.
I've heard people say
so
that before.
Yeah, it's just kind of puts me in a grumpy mood, and I have a very hard time getting back into the day. Also, sometimes foregoing a nap and taking a walk can do the same thing. And also, you know, I had a really horrible problem as a child with night terrors. And even all the way through college, I felt like I suffered from insomnia. And I thought I was going to have it the rest of my life. And then when I started really exercising, it changed it. And I have to say, I'm 50, in my mid-50s now, and I sleep very well. And, you know, maybe I should think a lot more on all the things I did to change it. But I know that the exercise really helped, and meditation. But I'm calling actually about my daughter who, ever since she was a baby, had snored. And it got to the point where her snoring was so loud that my other two daughters started complaining about it, and my husband and I would hear it. And so I finally took her to the doctor. I kept thinking she would outgrow it. I took her to the doctor when she was younger, and he said she would outgrow it. This was in Ireland. And then later on, when she didn't outgrow it, I took her in, and they gave her a tonsillectomy, a partial tonsillectomy, though. I think there's another word for it. I don't know what it is. And it did help, but it is not taking care of the problem completely, and I wonder what your take on that is.
Okay, Caroline, let's...
Should it have been a full tonsillectomy?
Okay, let's get an answer. Doctor?
Okay, well, first of all, I was just going to comment on you, Carolyn, that by taking up regular exercise, that really has helped with your sleep. And also, the sleep terrors are problems that generally become less as someone becomes an adult. Then moving on to your daughter, so that's interesting because it's been shown that tonsillectomy now these days is primarily done in children who have sleep apnea. That's the primary indication for removing tonsils, not recurrent sore throats. I'm not familiar with the partial tonsillectomy, but and I don't know. How old is she?
Well, she was 12 when she had it. She's 13 now.
Okay, yeah, she should
it
be.
It definitely helped. She still snores though.
Yeah, I mean, if
no one hears loud.
Okay, if she's having problems, I would suggest she be reevaluated. That she see a pediatric sleep specialist.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, our facility is not dealing with patients of her age, but there are other facilities in the Albany area that take pediatric patients. But it sounds like she should see a sleep specialist to get a thorough evaluation, mm-hmm. and then from that decide what kind of testing may be necessary.
Dr. Pluto, can you
name...
Yeah,
I just don't want it to be something that she has to deal with in college and,
okay.
In her adult life.
So, Dr. Pluto, can you name another sleep therapist who works with young people?
Okay, young people. Mm-hmm. Two that I can tell you right off the top of my head, and there are others, but the St. Peter's facility on Washington Avenue Extension takes pediatric
mm-hmm.
patients, as well as there's a facility on Slingerland's on New Scotland that takes pediatric patients as well. But there are others in the area, so I would go that route.
Okay, thank you, Caroline. Okay, now we'll go to line two. Okay, line two. Yeah, no, I got that. And we'll go to line two for Jenny. Jenny, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi there. My nutritionist recently, in order to curb my occasional use of aspirin and Advil for getting me back to sleep, has suggested lavender oil capsules and also cortisol manager, which is a combo of magnolia and an herb that begins with A. I don't know what it is. Ashwagandha, I think. And the second one, the cortisol manager, has been extremely effective, but only half the night. Are you familiar with these herbal products?
I'm familiar with several. I'm familiar with valerian root, but the particular ones you mentioned, specifically the cortisol manager, no, I'm not aware of those.
Cortisol manager. Well, the theory is that cortisol is a natural hormone that increases your stress level. And to decrease the cortisol will decrease the anxiety that accompanies insomnia. So I've had very good luck with it, and I just wanted to let your listeners know about that.
I appreciate the call. And again, regular sleep habits are important, a structured bedtime routine, exercise, also getting up at the same time can help. But I'll keep that in mind, the cortisol manager. Thank you. I'm not aware
Thanks a lot, Jenny.
Of that particular
All
item.
Right. And let's go to Brandon in Great Barrington. A lot of calls from Great Barrington today. They don't sleep too well over there. I know about that. Okay, Brandon, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for all that you do. And thank you, doctor, for taking your time out today for us. I was just wondering if you had ever heard of Buteyko breathing.
No. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
I can't. I don't know a whole lot about it. I have a friend who is a practitioner down in the city, and apparently this Russian fella did a lot of study about breathing and figured out like how to breathe correctly so you get the right amount of oxygen, which in turn like relieves things like sleep apnea. And I guess they've had a lot of success with sleep apnea, and like people have been able to, who have breathing troubles, have been able to use their inhalers less and things like that. And I had a friend who, we were at a gathering, and a friend had a sleep apnea and snoring problem, and the fellow that is the Buteyko practitioner said, well, let's start with taping your mouth shut. And he was saying that sleep apnea is caused because the way you breathe, or somehow your system says too much oxygen, don't inhale for a while, and then it gets to like a critical point and turns it back on. I don't know if that's true. I'm wondering if you do.
Well, there are two stimuli to breathe, the low oxygen or high carbon dioxide. I'm not familiar with Buteyko breathing. I mean, certainly any kind of rhythmic breathing is helpful in terms of relaxation, perhaps from a meditation point of view. But I would not recommend taping the mouth shut. That could be hazardous. But I'll keep this in mind, the Buteyko breathing. I'm not aware that sir?
It's spelled B-U-T-E-Y-K-O.
B-U-T-E-Y-K-O. And I treat patients with respiratory problems, and including asthma, as well as sleep disorders and sleep apnea. So I'll remember this one. But that's fascinating.
Okay, unfortunately, yes. we can't
Thank
go
you.
On this call because we have to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Saratoga Hospital, providing specialty practices including cardiology, primary care, hematology, and oncology, outpatient infusion, lab, and imaging at their Malta campus. SaratogaHospital.org for information. The Wild Center, featuring the Wild Walk, 1,000 feet of elevated bridges and experiences in the Adirondack treetops. WildCenter.org for details. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. And from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com.
And we are back, and we are delighted today because we have a wonderful guest, Dr. Pluto, Luke Pluto. He is a board-certified sleep and pulmonary disease specialist with the Albany Medical Center's Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine. He's a terrific guest. I really appreciate his giving us all of this time to be here. So we'll go to Roger in Albany. All right, Roger, your turn. You're on, Roger.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Roger.
Doctor, I've been diagnosed with central sleep apnea, idiopathic central sleep apnea, severe. That is to say, my lungs are fine, my heart is fine. And I was wondering, is that at all a common diagnosis?
Well, one second, please. Let me see if I can just cut in here for a moment. We've had a lot of doctors on, and inevitably they'll talk about idiopathic disease. And when I ask them to define idiopathic, they say, we don't know. Is that right?
That's what idiopathic means. That's exactly what it means. You've ruled out lung disease. You've apparently ruled out heart disease because heart disease is associated with central sleep apnea. Medications can be associated with it. But no, it is not a common problem, and each case needs to be handled uniquely. So are you having it treated right now?
Yeah, in your office, not in your personal office, but at Albany Medical Center.
Excellent.
The treatment is a VPAP.
Okay.
It's ramped up to a pretty high pressure, so it is difficult to keep the mask fitted and to keep it sealed and things like that. Are there alternatives?
No. So CPAP is basically a device to open up the...
No, sir, I have VPAP.
So VPAP actually breathes for you. It not only treats the sleep apnea treats the obstruction with the CPAP, but it also has a pressure that helps you breathe. So when you inhale, it breathes in and it helps you with the breath. And then there are other features of VPAP, and there are also some other modes that will help a person breathe, but it really depends on the individual and how the person reacts to that.
Well, the VPAP works very fine. I mean, okay. it doesn't always make it through a night without coming somehow moved a little bit, and therefore the mask leaks around the edges, things like that.
That can be true of CPAP also.
That can be true as well, yes. Do you feel better, though, since you've been using the VPAP?
Oh, no question, no question.
Good.
I've been using it for 6 or 7 years now.
Good.
And it's the difference between getting some really good sleep and getting pretty much none.
So in a case like that, check with the supplier, make sure that the mask is in good condition, make sure that you've got a good fit, and then if the pressure seems high, then that might be something to address with who's ever treating you for the sleep.
We just had a sleep study.
Good.
And the doctor just moved the pressure up.
Roger, I'm so sorry. I got to let you go because we have so many people on the phone right now. I want to try to get to everybody. Let's go to Sue, who's been hanging on for a long time here. Sue, your turn. Go ahead.
Patience is a virtue, Dr. Chertok.
Yes, it is. I should learn more about it.
I have had insomnia for a long time, and I had been taking Advil PM. And when I was in a rehab last year for a broken kneecap, the doctor said, no way, no more. It's essentially Benadryl. And he recommended melatonin, which works, but for only 3 milligrams. But I worry about taking it all the time. Should you take a break from it periodically? What do you suggest, doctor?
Yeah, melatonin is interesting. For a time there, melatonin was felt to be the wonder drug. I do have patients who take melatonin, generally not more than 3 milligrams. Some people even respond to 1 milligram. It hasn't been shown to have the same problems as things like Advil PM or Tylenol PM, which can cause damage over time. But I'd also consider maybe looking at your overall situation, whether it's trouble falling asleep or staying asleep. Or a little of both?
Both. Depends.
Okay.
I mean, there's an anxiety component here, too. I'm absolutely sure of that. And I do take Cymbalta, but that I take in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know,
don't want to be taking something without taking a break if it's dangerous to my health.
I tried melatonin. I got to tell you, I felt a little sense of hangover after that.
No, I don't have that. I did with the Benadryl.
Yeah, really, ideally for long term, I'd focus more on the behavioral approach, which again would be a structured bedtime routine.
I've done all that, Dr. Pluto.
Leaving the bedroom if you can't sleep, get up at the same time every day. What about exercise?
I exercise regularly. I'm in my 70s, but I belong to a health club and go probably 5 times a week and walk my dog.
Okay, so to answer your question.
And I'm not overweight.
So if you found the melatonin works, I think taking a break would be prudent. I don't know that it's going to have the same side effects as the long-term use of the Advil with the Benadryl combination, but I think taking a break would be prudent.
Okay.
Thank you, Sue. Okay, let's go to Leo in Albany. Leo, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I have a question about NASS. I've been using a CPAP for quite a while now. And the first mask I got, when you put it on, you would, you know, breathe in the air it gives you, and then when you exhale, the exhale would pretty literally stay in the mask. So on your next breath, you would inhale your exhale and whatever air, you know, you could get. And they put the, what do you call it, the vent, well, I'll call it, on the inlet, which to me makes no sense at all. You would think that, you know, the inlet, you know, is where the air is being pumped in. And you would think they would have an outlet somewhere else where, you know, the exhale can escape. And it's like, I don't understand why they do that. And the new mask I got, it's a different, you know, outlet, but it's still on the inlet.
Okay, we'll get a quick answer, Leo, because we have to move along.
Yeah, is the mask over the nose or nose and mouth?
It's just the nose. It's a small mask.
Okay. I would check with the supplier, because, I mean, you've got a point there. The outlet should be during exhalation, and so there generally is a some means, either a small hole or a feature of the mask itself, which allows you to exhale. Right. But I would check with the supplier first.
On the original mask I first got, I actually drilled a small hole on the top of it. So when I exhale, it would force out the exhale, and fresh air would be there to breathe in.
Right. You shouldn't be rebreathing the...
Right, on the newer mask I got.
Okay, Leo, I wish we could give you some more time, but we really can't.
Yeah, check with the supplier.
Thank you very much. And now we're going to go to Patient Ron, who has been hanging on for quite a while. Patient Ron, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Listen, I have a machine, a CPAP machine, and my air is set at a certain point. I've been waking up, and I'm still exhausted using my machine. So they suggested upping my air. Is that going to help, you think? Or, I mean, I'm still waking up exhausted.
Okay. Did you have any improvement initially when you started using it, or it's always been like this?
It's really been like that. I mean, I have days it's not bad, but most of the time I'm still tired as hell.
Okay. Okay. So every situation, again, is unique. And in some individuals, yes, I will make a recommendation to slightly increase the pressure, but there are several ways of determining the best pressure. Some of the newer units actually can vary the pressure depending on what is needed in a particular situation. For example, you might get more pressure if you're on your back than if you're on your side. And then in some situations...
I only sleep on my sides, never on my stomach or my back.
Okay. And in situations where it just doesn't seem like the machine is working, sometimes we'll have somebody come in and get what's called a CPAP titration. I don't know if you had that, but that's where...
I've had two sleep studies done.
And you've had the test done with the adjustment of the pressure, find the best pressure?
Yes.
Okay, so if I saw someone like you, I would look at the download from the machine and see if the apneas are controlled, and if the apneas are not controlled, I'd make further pressure adjustments. If the apneas are well controlled, then I'd start looking for some other cause for the sleepiness.
Yeah.
Okay. Got to go. Thanks a lot. All right. Now we'll go now to Jay in Pownall, Vermont. All right, Jay, you're on. Go.
Hey, Doctor, Jay. Go ahead. It's great to be. What an honor to be in presence of such genius. Well, Doctor, I'll make this quick because we're getting towards the end. But by accident, I cured my snoring, and it actually happened to be from Alan's show, his Sunday evening 6:30 medical show a few months ago. I have had a problem for quite a few years with acid reflux occasionally whenever I went to bed with a full belly, post-nasal drip going halfway through the day, and sniffling going through halfway. And this doctor he had on then suggested sleeping in, propping your pillows up and sleeping in a semi-sitting position. Well, this cured all sorts of things. I don't snore anymore, and no more acid reflux, no more post-nasal drip, which was not only a pain in the nose, but it was embarrassing. And when you mentioned about leaving the room, occasionally I will wake up once or twice a week and have problems getting back to sleep. Usually if I take a newspaper, whatever, read, but other times it alerts my mind. I simply go into the living room, get in a reclining chair, tip it halfway back so I don't snore and wake my wife up, and 10 minutes of reading the same newspaper or magazine, I'm asleep.
I hope that helps
folks out there try it.
Thanks, Jake. My only suggestion is don't eat too much before you go to sleep.
I think that goes without saying when I realize. And also, your metabolism slows down. You don't want that stuff all building up in your arteries.
Well, you certainly helped with the acid reflux that you described with the heartburn by elevating the head of the beds, and then you got the added benefit of decreasing the post-nasal drip and the snoring. So that's great.
Right, because what this doctor explained was that the fumes and actually some of the stomach contents can actually go to the sinuses.
Interesting. You must have had a really bad case of it then.
Hey, Jay, got to let you
Thank
go.
You.
Well, Thank you. All right, look, we'll go to... we're going to go to EJ in Southwick, Massachusetts. EJ, you're on.
Alan.
Hey.
Yes, Alan. Thanks for the show. You're getting close to the end. I'm going to make two quick comments.
Okay.
The first is to ask the doctor about the pillars procedure. I live in Massachusetts. They are not paying for it through Blue Cross and Blue Shield. But if you're using it, and have you been successful?
I'm a medical physician, so I'm not an ear, nose, and throat surgeon, per se. Yes,
can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you just fine.
The pillars procedure is very specific by ear, nose, and throat physicians, and so I don't generally do that procedure.
I'm a medical physician, so I'm not an ear, nose...
That phone connection is not working, that is for sure. So did you want a real brief answer on that?
I would like to talk about the pillars procedure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the pillars procedure is putting devices in the back of the throat to hold the throat open. This is done in some very specialized situations. It's not something that I generally do, nor do I generally recommend it. It hasn't really been found to be universally successful for sleep apnea.
Okay, great, thanks. I want to remind everybody that rule number one on this show is, because it's a 7-second delay, you can't listen to the answer on the radio. You have to listen in the phone. Got it? Okay. I think that's what happened the last time. All right. Now we're going to go to, Bob in Poughkeepsie. All right, Bob in Poughkeepsie, you're on.
Doctor, I've got a question out of the left field. I have Parkinson's. My normal daily routine starts about 5:30, go to bed at 9, wake up around 2:30, and I'm awake unless I do about 15, 20 minutes exercise, and then I'm going to fall asleep for another hour and a half.
That sounds right.
That's tough. I mean, Parkinson's disease is not only associated with difficulty sleeping, there's also a higher propensity of sleep apnea in people with Parkinson's disease.
But that hour and a half sounds very familiar to me. That's what happens to me.
I take a Mirapex, and that slows things down. But if I don't do that 15-20 minute light workout, I'm awake, and by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 p.m., my day is shot.
Yep.
Yeah, so the workout's excellent. Stick with your neurologist, though. That's a challenge. Parkinson's disease is a very challenging problem, but it sounds like you're getting good treatment and taking a good approach to it.
Okay, Bob, thank you very much. Let's go to Michael. All right, Michael, you're on. Michael in Valencia. Hey, Michael, are you there?
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm right here. Great show. I just called basically to commiserate because I understand a lot of people can't wear the mask, and I can vouch to that. My question is, my medical supplier has given me masks, and they give me masks with this picture of this happy guy on the cover because they're trying to sell it. And I asked them, because it looks like it's a silicone mask, and the only mask I've been getting from my supplier is Velcro. And the problem is the Velcro, it doesn't make a tight fit. The mask leaks. I go to sleep with it on. I think I have once in the 2 years I've been using it, I've actually woken up with it on. But more often than not, I can't go to sleep with it on. and wake up with it on.
Is the mask?
And I wake up by it subsequently.
Okay, is the mask over the nose or nose and mouth?
It's over the nose.
Okay, have you tried the nasal pillows?
I tried the nasal pillows, and I find them to be more annoying than a Velcro mask. The problem with the Velcro mask, as you're going to testify to, is it has these plastic nodules on the side. So I'm wondering, is there a better design? I mean, I've looked online, I've done research, and I'm thinking silicone would be a better fit than
Stop right there because we're almost out of time. Doctor, anything else to say on this?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I just check with your supplier, go through all the different types of masks systematically.
Sure. Masks are very important. I'm so sorry. Got to cut you off because we are out of time. Thanks to everybody who called in. I want to apologize to Beth and Susan and Jill and Betsy and Gary, who we all left on the line. And thanks especially to Dr. Luke Pluto for joining us today. Underwriting support comes for Medical Monday from Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons. Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. Thanks again for joining us. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Raymond Graff himself. Used to be Jessica Blaustein Marshall, but she's retired. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.